pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that a lot of folks walked right past for the better part of 50 years, because for most of that time she wasn't much to look at. Just a nose section, really? A battered piece of a bomber sitting in a warehouse, painted a tired olive drab, with a name stenciled under the cockpit in white letters that most people never bothered to read. That name is Flakbait. And if you know what those two words mean, you don't walk past, you stop, you take your hat off. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar, where we don't just look at the airplanes behind the ropes. We tell you what they did to earn their place there. Today we're going to the Smithsonian, and we're going to talk about the airplane that flew more combat missions than any other American aircraft in the entire Second World War, and brought her crews home from every single one of them. Now before I get going, let me tell you who's keeping the coffee hot this morning. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And you know that's fitting for today, because the airplane we're talking about was a milestone machine. Every mission was a coin she earned the hard way. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's go back. The airplane is a Martin B-26 Marauder. Now, if you flew in the 1940s, that name gave you a certain feeling in your stomach, and it wasn't always a good one. The Marauder came out of the Glenn L. Martin Company in Baltimore, and she was fast. Fast for a medium bomber, faster than just about anything in her class. Twin Pratt and Whitney R. 2800 radials. Big 18-cylinder double wasps, hauling her along at close to 300 miles an hour. But here's the thing about going fast. The Martin engineers gave her a small wing. A short, stubby little wing to cut drag and keep the speed up. And a small wing means a high landing speed. That airplane came over the fence hot, and she did not forgive you if you got slow and sloppy. The young pilots coming out of flight school in 1942 were used to trainers that floated down gentle as a leaf. Then they climbed into a Marauder, and she wanted to be flown onto the runway at 130 miles an hour, or she'd quit flying and drop out from under them. They started calling her names. The Widowmaker, the Baltimore Horror, because they said she had no visible means of support, meaning that little wing, out at the training base in Tampa, so many of them went into the swamp, that the saying became one a day in Tampa Bay. Now here's where it gets interesting. The airplane wasn't the problem. The training was once the Army got serious about teaching pilots to respect the numbers, to keep the speed up, to fly her like she demanded to be flown. The Marauder turned into one of the safest bombers of the whole war. By the end, she had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber in the European theater. The lowest, that widow-making reputation. And she ended up bringing more men home per mission than the Fortresses and the Liberators that got all the songs written about them. And no single airplane proved that better than the one with the ugly name. Flakbait. She rolled out of the Martin plant in Baltimore in 1943, AB-26B model, and she went to the 449th Bomb Squadron of the 322nd Bomb Group, 9th Air Force, over in England. Her pilot was a young man named Jim Farrell, and it was his brother who gave her the name. Farrell had a dog back home, a mutt his family called Fleabait, and so sitting there in England waiting for the war, Jim Farrell looked at his new bomber and figured she was about to become a magnet for German anti-aircraft fire. Fleabait became Flakbait. They painted it on the nose, and under it they started keeping a tally. Let me set the scene for you, because I want you to feel what these men climbed into it. It's before dawn, on an English airfield. Cold, that wet English cold that gets into your bones and won't leave. The grass is soaked. There's a low overcast, the kind that makes you wonder if the mission will even go. And out on the hard stands sit these olive drab bombers, dripping with dew, engines ticking as the ground crews run them up. You climb up into that airplane through the belly, and the smell hits you. Hydraulic fluid. Cold aluminum. 100-octane fuel and oil and rubber and the sweat of the men who flew her yesterday. It's cramped. There's no heater worth the name. You're going to spend the next 4 or 5 hours at 15,000 feet where it's 40 below, breathing through an oxygen mask that freezes to your face. Then those two big Pratt and Whitneys cough and catch and roar, and the whole airframe comes alive around you, shaking and rattling and pulling. You taxi out in a long line of bombers, and you firewall those throttles, and that short-winged airplane runs and runs down the runway, and finally, right when you think she never will, she lifts off, heavy with bombs and fuel, and claws her way up into that gray English morning. And somewhere across the channel, the Germans are waiting. Flak, that's the word. It's short for a great long German word, Flugabwehrkanone, which just means anti-aircraft cannon, and what it meant to a bomber crew was this: black puffs of smoke blooming all around you at your exact altitude. Each puff is a shell that just went off, throwing red-hot steel splinters in every direction. You can't dodge it. You can't shoot back at it. You just have to fly straight and level through it on the bomb run. Hold your course and pray the next one isn't the one with your name on it. And Flakbait flew into that over and over and over again. Bridges in France, marshalling yards, airfields, gun positions. Then D-Day, the 6th of June 1944, she was up over the beaches at Normandy, hammering the German defenses. Then the breakout, then the push across France into Germany itself. She kept flying, and she kept getting hit. They counted more than 1,000 holes in that airplane over the course of the war. 1,000. She came home one time with a wingtip shot away. She came home with her hydraulics gone, with her electrical system dead, with an engine out. One time a chunk of flak came through and cut the control cables down to a single strand, and that one strand held long enough to get her onto the ground. Her crews brought her back trailing smoke on one engine, with the instruments shot out, time after time after time, and that tally on the nose kept climbing. 50 missions, 100, 150. Little yellow bombs painted in neat rows, and then they ran out of room and had to keep painting. 200 missions. Do you understand how impossible that number is? The crews rotating through her, most bomber crews in that war were praying just to survive 25, and later 30, 35 missions. That was your ticket home. The odds of living through a full tour early in the war were worse than a coin flip, and here's this one airplane grinding out 200 sorties, then more. She flew her last one on the 26th of April, 1945. Mission number 202 under her own group, and with a couple of others tallied in, the number painted on her nose came to 202, though her true count of operational sorties runs even higher depending on how you tally the recalls and the aborts. Call it right around 207 times that airplane went to war, more than any other American aircraft in the Second World War. And in all those missions, across all those crews, across all that flak and all those fighters and all those thousand holes, not one man aboard her was ever killed. Not one. Now let me tell you what happened to her after the guns went quiet, because this is the part that gets me. When the war ended, the Army looked at all these thousands of warplanes, and mostly they did the practical, heartbreaking thing. They flew them out to the desert or to fields in Europe, and they scrapped them, melted them down, turned the airplanes that won the war into pots and pans and aluminum siding. The vast majority of the B-26 Marauders ever built, and they built almost 5,200 of them, were simply destroyed. Today, there is not one single Martin Marauder anywhere in the world that is airworthy. Not one flying example of an airplane they made by the thousands. But somebody somewhere looked at Flakbait and could not do it, could not send her to the smelter. This was the airplane, the one with the record, so they saved her. They cut her down, crated up the nose section and the key pieces, and shipped her back to the United States. And she went to the Smithsonian in 1960. And then for decades, that's where she sat in storage, in pieces, that famous nose with its 200-plus mission markers and its 1,000 patched holes, sitting in a warehouse out in Maryland, where hardly anyone ever saw her. For a while, they had the nose on display, and if you knew what you were looking at, you leaned in close and you could see the patches, the little aluminum band-aids riveted over the flak holes. You could put your hand near the aluminum that took those hits and think about the boys who were sitting right behind it. Now here's where it gets good again. The Smithsonian's people, the folks at the National Air and Space Museum, they made a decision. Flakbait was too important to leave in pieces, but she was also too important and too original to just slap back together. Because you see, that airplane is a document. Every patch, every repair, every scrape and scar and faded stencil is a record of what actually happened to her. You restore that the wrong way, you sand it all down and repaint her bright and shiny and new, and you've destroyed the very thing that makes her matter. You'd have a pretty airplane and a dead story. So they took the hard road. The slow road. Over at the Udvar Hazy Center out by Dulles Airport in Virginia, in the restoration hangar there, they've been working on Flakbait for years now. And it is the most painstaking kind of work you can imagine. They are conserving her, not just restoring her. They're documenting every one of those thousand holes. They're preserving the original paint, the original patches, the original skin that flew through the flak. Where something has to be stabilized, they do it in a way you could reverse later. They photograph everything. They test the old materials. They treat that airplane the way a museum treats an old master painting, because that's exactly what she is. It is thousands upon thousands of hours of work. Careful hands, magnifying lenses, tiny tools, men and women leaning over that 70-plus-year-old aluminum, cleaning decades of grime off one square inch at a time and finding under it the fingerprints of 1944. And the best part, at Udvar Hazy, that restoration hangar has windows. You can go there right now and watch them work. You can stand there and see Flakbait coming back together, the way she really was, scars and all. When she's done, she won't fly. She'll never fly again, and that's all right. She did her flying. What she'll do is stand there in that great museum and tell the truth, the whole truth, in olive drab, with every hole she ever took still there to see. I think about those young pilots in Tampa, the ones who were scared to death of the Widowmaker, and I think about how the airplane they feared turned out to be the one that saved more of them than any other. There's a lesson in that, and it's the same lesson I've been preaching on the show for years. It isn't the airplane, it's how well you know her. Respect the numbers, fly her the way she asks to be flown. Keep your speed up, and even a machine they call the Widowmaker will bring you home 200 times. My thanks to the good people at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, whose conservators are keeping Flakbait's story alive down at Udvar-Hazy, and to the historians of the 9th Air Force who wrote down what those Marauder crews did so the rest of us could remember. If you're ever out near Dulles, go find her. And if you want more on where we've been, it's all at radiohangar.com. 207 missions, 1,000 holes. Not one man lost. Some airplanes are just built to bring you home. This is Tail Dragger. Keep the greasy side down.